Cliffcentral. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
Cliffcentral.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Made Sessions with Cliffcentral.com. I'm on my own today, as Tulisa's voice has gone missing, and despite our best efforts, we're unable to locate it at this time. But thankfully, our guest today is larger than life. So we always talk about the power domestic workers have to facilitate change in South Africa. And often we speak from conviction, but one person who knows from experience is Penny Steyn. Her project, Domestic Watch, has done some amazing work with domestic workers. She calls herself Mad Penny, which is an acronym for Making a Difference, although it is literally a bit mad what she's managed to achieve over the years. She's a bit like the Godfather in this context, and we can't wait to uncover her wisdom. Welcome, Pence.
Thank you.
It's such a delight to have you here.
Thank you so much, Mbali, and thank you for having me today.
Your energy is infectious, I must say. A penny for your thoughts, huh?
A penny for my thoughts.
So, won't you tell the listeners, what is Domestic Watch?
Okay. Mad Domestic Watch is endeavoring at all costs to make a difference with regards to crime in this country. And of course, the most important people in our country are the domestics and the gardeners. I love them dearly.
The most important, huh?
Yes, of course, they're the most important.
I agree.
They make extraordinary difference to our country. You know, there are very few countries in the world who are blessed enough to have domestics to look after their homes, keep the home, and enable the employers to go out and do what they do. They look after the children. They keep what they don't do is just it's just a long list. When I look at the to-do list, and if I were to write a job description for domestics, I mean, you know, and I come out the recruitment business, so I could write a CV that would sort of go on and on and on, because they do so much.
I mean, really, they do everything that we need, and it varies from home to home.
Yeah,
but I think kind of the value in this role, particularly in South Africa, is, like you've said, how personal it is. But also the fact that these are women who are so willing to be loosely applied and to help in whatever way they can,
yeah,
within the home,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And most of them do it as mothers and as sisters, very instinctively. I think they care for South African homes as though they were their own.
Without any question. You know, we were talking at the last lesson, and I was telling them about professional people. And I said, you know, when people are really, really good at what they do, they usually have a recipe. I said, please put up your hand if you're a professional, because you don't have to think about what you'd have to do.
Mm.
You don't have to time what you're doing. You know how to do it, what you need, how long it's going to take. I mean, they do it without even thinking, because that's what a professional does.
Mm.
There is a recipe to being really good at what you do.
Mm.
And that's what we have. We have these extraordinary people who, and they go the extra mile for us, you know. But the main thing that we have to look at here is that we've got to protect them. We've got to enable them. We've got to empower them. The most important thing of all, in my opinion, is not only the knowledge that they gain through the lessons that I am giving them, but you have to motivate them.
Okay, so explain your program to someone who's never heard of it.
Okay, well, you know, in Bali, I knew nothing about crime, absolutely nothing. I had relocated from Cape Town. I had my door leading into the garden from my bedroom that I never really locked, because I kept a couple of the dogs in the room with me, and they would just wander in and out, you know, at night, etc. And my knowledge of crime and security was zero. I had a gardener who was a relative of somebody I knew. And he was an older man, and every time I asked him to do something for me, can I use the word footsack?
Of course, you can say whatever you like.
All right, well, he told me to footsack. Not quite with that word, but anyway. So, you know, I've got to use my sense of humor here in Bali. Anyway, so now...
although it's not said that politely. It's more attack.
No.
No need to be polite.
Anyway, every time I asked him to do something, he seemed to be put out by it. So I sat him down, having come out of recruitment, and I said to him, you know what? You really need to be happy in your job. It's so important. You know, I've written books on qualities that lead to promotion and I was very involved in the recruitment business. So I wanted him to be really happy. Mm. Anyway, he left and he didn't come back. And he sent two young people to my house to give this white woman a wake up.
Wow.
And boy, oh boy, wow. He knew the layout. They knew they'd been to the house.
Wow.
They came in. It only came out about 4 years later when my housekeeper, a personal assistant, went to the church and overheard somebody saying, those are the two guys that tried to strangle Penny.
Goodness.
But of course, that by that stage, it was too late to do anything about it. It definitely wasn't the old man because I fought like a wild person. I managed to get a finger in my mouth and I bit like a crazy person. And I wasn't going to let go. Oh, no, no, no. I hung on to that finger. I was going to hang. And the next thing I heard, and I'm thinking, yo, there's another person here. You can imagine while you're being strangled how this is happening. Anyway, cut a very long story. So now, I realized I had to go onto antiretrovirals, and my teeth were threatening to fall out of my face.
Can you explain that a bit?
Well, I had blood in my mouth because I was biting the finger.
I see.
Yeah. Anyway, so I went through that whole process. The doctors all got me to cry all over again, and the dentists, and goodness knows what they
That's
said.
That's so traumatic, and it's often after the fact.
Yeah.
Everything you have to go through after that.
Yeah, exactly.
Medically and in terms of counseling as well.
Yeah. I didn't get any counseling.
You didn't get any counseling?
I should have, yeah. Yeah, no, I didn't.
My goodness, why not?
I didn't know that there was, you know, I just didn't think about it.
To this day?
To this day.
So I guess Domestic Watch has been a form of healing and counseling.
Oh, there's no question about
that. Right, so you then, after this traumatic incident, decide to do what?
Well, I tried to get hold of the police. Mm. I did make a statement. And
did you have suspicions as to who
well,
it was?
Well, I thought it was the gardener.
Okay.
I thought, but there were no teeth mark on his finger. So it definitely wasn't him. The police went there that night. They were so kind to me, the police.
Mm.
I mean, they came to my home that evening. They even got me to laugh before they left. I mean, there I was, you know, giving them all sorts of advice on all sorts of different topics, etc. And but that was the next morning when – anyway, so I really couldn't when I tried to get a case number, they said, no, we've got nothing on attempted murder. So eventually I said, you know what? I don't need the police. I've got my life. I've got my teeth. I've got my antiretrovirals. I don't need the police. So about 4 days, 5 days later, I got this, because this was a Monday. By the Friday, I get this call. And I've got this young man. He was a constable at the time. And his name is Lucky Comella.
Mm.
And he said to me, Mrs. Stain, he said, I've been trying to get hold of you. I said, thank you so much. It's so sweet of you to come to follow. I said, but I don't need the police. He said, listen very nicely to me. If you've got a problem, I need to know about it. Lucky Comella changed my life completely. It took him 15 minutes to be on my doorstep. He came, we sat down, and when he was leaving, I said to him, how can I say thank you for being so kind to me?
Mm.
He said, well, you could write me a thank you letter. I said, no, I can do much. I'll write you. I went, Dumela Kumela is a very special fella. If you ever have to Bella, he is your fella. I wrote
Did you compose a song?
And they put it in the Stanton Chronicle. And he said, you know what? You've made me famous, Penny. I said, no, you've made yourself famous.
That's hysterical. I love it.
Yeah, so he was the person who brought me on board. But where I started was training the police. And
okay.
I loved it.
So Lucky was already involved in Domestic Watch.
He was a sector manager. He was one of the first ones.
And Domestic Watch, my understanding is, I mean, I know you do a whole lot of things, but the main thing you provide is self-defense training for domestic workers.
Now, I wouldn't call it self-defense. I would say that there are two arms to my training. I've written 68 lessons in Bali, so there's no shortage of material here.
Remarkable.
Yeah. Mm. So each person gets a written handout from me on when they come to the lesson.
Okay, so in a nutshell then, what would you say?
Basically, it's how to prevent crime and how to pass on information without putting lives in danger. I'm terribly protective of the domestics and gardeners. You know, I will tell them, you know, you cannot walk around blabbing your mouth out. There's no question. I mean, they're on the property more than their employers.
Right.
They're walking the streets. They know what's going on in the area. They know who belongs in the area. They know when the master next door has arrived home. Mm. I don't know these things. Mm. They do. Mm. They know when there's been an incident in because the grapevine amongst them is enormous. So they're terribly important, but you've got to give them the tools.
And oftentimes I think they're more at risk than the families themselves, right?
Hugely. You see, I mean, one of the things that staggers me, sorry, excuse my voice, what staggers me is they don't give them the tools to do the job.
Mm.
I mean, how do you wash the dishes without the dishwashing liquid? You can't mow the lawn without a lawnmower.
Mm.
They've got to have the
tools. But isn't this testament to how many hats they wear within the household,
well,
right?
That's the point.
Because one would think a domestic worker was primarily responsible, or exclusively rather, responsible for the cleaning and maybe the child minding within the home.
Yeah.
But at times they do wear the hats of security guards. Sometimes they do the gardening. Sometimes they wash the dogs.
They do essentially
everything that we need.
Of course they do. Of course they do. I think it's time that we started respecting them with a lot more. One of the things I've said to them is, I don't care if people don't like me. It's not my problem.
Mm.
It's their problem.
Mm.
What I do care about is I want to be respected.
Mm.
But you've got to give them the tools to, in other words, you've got to give them a panic button to use in the house.
Mm.
I mean, and they should be wearing it at all times. You've got to give them the patrolling numbers of the police to be able to call them. You've got to be, you know what I'm saying? You've got to give them the wherewithal how to lock the electricity. I mean, we were doing a talk on electricity, and this domestic, the trip switch kept going.
Mm.
And so she took a broom and she pushed the trip switch up.
Right.
And of course, the house burnt down and the family and the children with it. You see, unfortunately, there is no room left in South Africa to know no better. We have to empower them with the knowledge and the tools.
And I think skills development is a big thing that's lacking in this space, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of the domestic workers that come through placement agencies will get some training.
Yeah.
But in large part, our domestic workers are undocumented. And, you know, there's no kind of formal system of recruitment in place. You know, a lot of them are passed on from friends and families, and there's referrals and whatnot.
Sure.
And I think in those cases particularly, there is no training.
Yeah. You know, in body,
and sometimes there's no contract.
Yeah. No, well, that in itself is a problem.
Mm.
One of the things that I'd really like to have is the CETA accreditation for my lessons. But, you know, it's such a mountain to climb that I'm running away from that.
So run us through a few of your lessons. Not in detail, but what areas do you cover?
The first one that I always do is know your neighbor. Because you don't have to like your neighbor. You don't have to sleep with your neighbor.
Sure.
But you have to know them.
Sure.
Okay. Emergency medical care.
Mm-hmm.
What to do. How to go outside and look for the ambulance and wave them down and lock up the dogs and tra-la-la. Okay. What is the flying squad? How to deal with them. How to talk to them.
You see, even I don't know this stuff.
No, trust me. I have some employers who come and they go, gee, even I learned something. And I go, footsack,
no, absolutely.
Of course you learned something.
No, but you're turning them into super citizens, which
is absolutely
fantastic. You're doing such a service to our country.
Absolutely, yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, I had one that said to me in this last lesson, she said, Penny's lessons can never be boring. She says, apart from the humor, I do make them laugh. Eh? You know,
I really
am quite naughty. I smack my fanny and I... and I kiss them and I sing and dance with them. crime prevention, traveling tips. What else have we got here? Abuse is a crime, rape, child protection, telephones. I mean, the telephones is a beautiful topic. Habits and routines. They've got to change these habits and routines. Drugs, alcoholism, and shebeens. Fraud and corruption. What to do during and after a crime incident. Forensics protection.
What a wealth of content.
How to report crime anonymously. But I think the main thing, I realized at one stage, I'd written a lot of stuff on how to pass on information, and it wasn't getting me anywhere. Maybe it's my fault because I'm so protective of them. I say, listen, just be very careful how you handle it. If you're not sure, I know the police. I know these people. I'll tell you who you can talk to. I know who I can trust and not trust.
How do you do assessment?
Of who I can trust?
No. So once you've delivered the lessons, how are you able to measure your
I get
your
feedback.
Success?
I get feedback from the employers.
Okay.
I get feedback from people like Advocate Nell. I was a guest speaker with a Rotarian function. It was the whole cluster, the whole area, and I was a guest speaker. And Advocate Nell actually stood up and she said to me, where Penny has implemented, we've done research on her work, and where Penny has implemented this work, her crime has virtually disappeared.
This is incredible. So there is, I mean, give us an idea of your reach so far.
Well, you know, I had up to 26 suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
I closed some of them this year.
Right.
It's very hard for me to close because I love the people who are coming and my loyalty lies with them. But I realized that I actually have to go where I can be effective.
Right.
And so sometimes you've got to close because it becomes a tea party syndrome.
Okay.
And that's where it started.
Okay.
It was literally little tea parties in little people's backyards and they were all having nice cake and a tea. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, no, this is not going to work. We've got to grow it. We've got to get the masses in there. I mean, at one stage I was doing Four Ways Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting 150 domestics and gardeners. And I said, okay, guys.
Are they coming voluntarily or are their employers sending them?
No, listen. The people who come to my people, as I like to call them, they come because they want to come.
Okay.
Please believe me, they will not come if they think it's boring.
So tell me, what is the role of the employer?
The employer needs to support it. The employer needs to say, of course you must go and get your motivational injection this month, because everything is set in concrete. My lessons are set in concrete. The venue is set in concrete. So they know I send them SMSs, and they also work towards their certificates.
Mm.
So I give them certificates every year.
I mean,
so the role of the employer.
I feel like the benefit of what you do is twofold, right?
Yeah.
Firstly, it's obviously to the domestic worker.
Yes.
And the gardeners.
Yes.
So to the candidates directly.
Yes.
But then there is value for the employer.
Well, without any question.
Right.
Yes.
And I guess I wonder how much of a role they play in supporting you.
I think for the most part, if the employer knows that this is available, the snag that I've hit or the challenge that I've hit is that I think when I give them certificates, they think they've qualified. And that applies to both parties.
Mm.
And I keep having to tell them, even at the year-end event, which, by the way, is next Thursday, the
17th.
Trust me, I'm bubbling to go, boy.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be amazing. We've got entertainers and luncheons and party bags and singers and choir leading and DVDs that we're making.
This bunch know how to have fun, huh?
Oh, no. They love it. You know what I'm doing this year? I'm going to do face painting. So, and I'm cutting them into little blockies, and they've got little water, and they've all got earbuds to make the little face painting. Oh no, trust me, we're going to be. So it's the highlight of their year. It really is.
And do any employers attend?
Oh yes.
Okay.
Yes, I always say to them, I encourage you to bring your employers, but they must come in their own transport because the transport is quite expensive for me.
Okay, so you were saying the snag is that once you've given the certificate, they feel like they've qualified.
Yes. So some of them don't come back.
Okay.
You see, I keep very strict records. Mm. I send out religiously. I send out the SMSs every single month, about 3 or 4 days ahead of time, so that they are reminded. And they work towards those certificates, I promise you.
Mm.
Some of them, Mbali, some of them have got up to like 10 certificates and followed me from suburb to suburb. And they go, oh, Penny stayed. She's available in Craigle Park, or she's opened in Bedford View. She's back in bed. When I went back to Bedford View, they actually stood up and started doing hallelujahs and goodness knows what. It was just wonderful. I heard from the guy.
So tell me something, and this is really for our purposes as well, something that we've grappled with a lot, because we take our role for instance, you know, and we do many things,
yes.
but certainly through the MAID sessions, we want to create a platform for conversation, right? And initially, our focus was exclusively on domestic workers, and then
yes.
we realized that it's more about the relationship.
Yeah.
And so you cannot address domestic workers, and you cannot address the conditions they work in and their lives and their issues if you leave the employer out of that conversation.
You're quite right.
And actually, if ultimately what we want to do is, first of all, build this institution, but also, I think, do something for the country as a whole,
yeah.
then it needs to be an inclusive platform.
Mm.
So I guess I wonder
how
for you mm. whether you feel like your work would be even more effective, your lessons, for instance.
It would.
If
yes.
employers would participate
without
as well.
Without any question. I was invited in Blairgowrie to do a Saturday morning. And we did it in the middle of the month because, you know, beginning of the month, end of the month are not always good. And I actually had a lesson printed very specifically. It was all on glossy paper, no less. And I had
glossy paper goes a long way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, full color, the whole shooting match. But I had, I think I had seven of my lessons condensed onto this. So I started at 9. And I think I finished by about 12:30 going mm-hmm. on for 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a man phone me, a homeowner, an employer, and he said, you know, Penny, we are still talking. My domestic and I are still talking about what you taught us at that particular session. So that is a particularly good thing to do. But you do battle. You do battle. I don't know whether there's an arrogance here as to
That's
whether they feel they don't need it. But I can tell you another way that you can get around this, Mbali. I would love to go to an Eskom or to a Nedbank or one of those and say to them, the last Friday of the month, mufti day, you know, mufti, you all come in casual clothes. You bring your domestics and gardeners and let's spoil them. And let's have, we'll start at 8 o'clock in the morning, and by 10 o'clock we'll have scones and tea and cold drinks and they all sit in the auditorium together and we go through. I've actually just been invited to a very big company to train 400 people. Now, I've got lots of wishes in Bali, lots of them. Mm-hmm. But if I had a wish list, I would want those employees, because they're 400 of them, to bring their staff to work with them.
Do you know
them.
What's interesting is that we've managed quite well to include a variety of people in our conversations, a range of domestic workers as well as employers,
yeah.
As well as thought leaders and even some, I mean, we haven't quite gotten around to policymakers yet, but we'll certainly get there.
Yeah.
And we've managed to have these conversations with these different parties and silos. It's incredibly difficult to bring them all together, particularly the domestic worker and the employer.
Yeah.
And we've, I think, had success from time to time, but it's something we've struggled with, is to bring them both to the table.
Yeah.
And I wonder why that is. Because we've had shows and focus groups with madams, and I say that in quotations, because
yeah.
anyone with a domestic worker is a madam.
Yeah.
And we've had shows and focus groups with domestic workers.
Yeah.
But for some reason, there seems to be reservations around everyone,
you know,
sitting at one table.
I think the most important thing is that first of all, those people who are coming to my lessons, I'm never going to get the people who are working at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. I'm not going to get those people.
Mm.
So the rule is is that you are going to become the teacher. When you become the teacher of what I've taught, because my storytelling, I'm a storyteller, and boy, have I got stories to tell, good
you.
And bad.
I believe
all right?
you.
Yeah. So now the rule is that they've got to teach the employers what they've learned today.
So they've got to pass it on.
Exactly. They've got to pass it on. And then ideally, please, Lord, good Lord above, they must take it to their family and their their friends, whatever they've learned. Okay. But they are doing that. Okay. I mean, I had one gardener who was really quite funny. He said to me, you know what, Penny, when I go home, and they love it because they get this big grin. They're so proud of themselves. And so they jolly well ought to be because they know they're getting information and knowledge that their employers will never know, never. Mm. Okay. And he used to lay out the chairs, the garden chairs. Madam, get off the phone. Master, come off the computer. Johnny, get off the PlayStation. Come and sit here. And he would actually then walk up and down, and he'd start mimicking me. He says, Penny, I told him. And I said, yeah. And Penny says, we got to know the 112 FUTSAC is the emergency number for the police. Yeah. And, I mean, they do a duplication of me, and they get their employers laughing. So
you know, do you think it can be a team effort then?
Jolly right, it's got to be a team effort.
I know it's got to be.
Yeah.
But do you think it – how do we fare as a country in terms of that?
I don't think we fare very well.
Yeah?
Because my reach is not far enough.
Okay.
I need to train other people to do what I do.
Mm.
I have already made 23 DVDs to enable other people to do what I do.
Mm.
Because it's the storytelling, as I said to you, that you, it's all very well to read a document that I've written, but the storytelling and the personality that goes with it. You know, I don't talk down to people.
Mm.
They say, oh, you know, you have the ability to talk at their level. I also want to tell them to FUTSAC when
what,
I
tell me something.
Rubbish.
What kind of modules would you make specifically for madams? Just off the top of your head. If you could think, if you wanted to impart some knowledge.
Yeah. Well, certainly everything related to criminal cons, criminal crime methods, who is attacking you and what to do, how and what and how to report crime information
what
anonymously. Certainly I would teach them things like safety. Mm. What is safety? Because they've got no clue. I would certainly teach them.
I wonder specifically in terms of their relationships with their domestic workers.
Yeah.
For all of this to be effective.
Yeah.
What would you want to tell them?
Well, I think the most important thing that we have, certainly the most dangerous thing that we have, is a bad relationship between a domestic and an employer or a gardener and employer.
Mm.
That is a red flag danger.
Mm.
Danger.
Mm.
I've had to do some serious foot shuffling with people who've gone and done polygraphs on a domestic who's gone to have her to get her to the clinic to get her HIV medication. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things here. I do a few things on medical, by the way, because, you know, we've just done one on TB this year.
Mm.
You know, they're going to hide it from the employers. And I said, you've got to tell your employers that
polygraphs.
How would you feel?
Do people really
Yeah, they do polygraphs. The people over the road from me did a polygraph on their domestic. Well, she put out, damn right she was.
Okay, so then do you think that at least one of the very fundamental problems is the trust?
Yes, trust is one of my topics.
Now, this is what I want to, and I think you are the right person to comment on this, because what I find beautiful and ironic about your story, what gives me hope, is that you were attacked, right?
Yeah.
Within an inch of your life.
Yeah.
By people.
Yeah.
Who was sent by you, you subsequently found out were sent by your gardener. Okay.
Sure.
Now, for the average person, that would create paranoia. That would create an even bigger distance between them and domestic workers and them and gardeners.
Yeah.
But you went in the opposite direction. You went, you got even closer to this group as a result.
Yeah.
Which is a remarkable twist of fate, but clearly something you set out to do deliberately. And I wonder what it is, because I think perspective is so important. Now, what it is that made you do the opposite? Something almost so counterintuitive for the average South African.
Well, let's start with my childhood.
Okay.
My mother was stood on the Houses of Parliament in the 19s, FUTSAC, to for
I think the past we'll just laws. Show. I think we'll call the show Footsec.
Yeah, we'll call this one Footsec.
Yeah, shall we?
Yeah, that's a jolly good idea. When I was growing up, I used to call the domestic in our house my sweetie and my darling. But you see, I'm a real theatrical. Mm. I'm really quite naughty. You know, I do this whole theatrical thing. And I'm just a frustrated theatrical. That's what I am. And this is definitely a platform for me.
Frustrated artist.
Yeah. But because I've always loved them and I've always respected them and I've always had a sense of humor with them and I've always admired and respected them. And in Bali, I have to tell you, nothing has changed. I don't think people change. I think they just become more of what they were. So from a very little girl, I used to call them my sweetie and my darling. My daddy used to say, they're not your sweetie and your darling. You mustn't use those. You mustn't talk like. I said, but daddy, she's really my sweetie. Mm. And the garden is also my sweetie and my darling. Mm. And I love them very much because they're very, very nice to me. And damn right, they're nice to me.
And then fast forward to when you're attacked by one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't be painted into a little corner in terms of everybody's going to be painted with the same brush. Unfortunately, very sadly, there are. I mean, I know a lot of people who go to the police meetings on a Monday morning in Sandton Precinct, okay? Mm. And they come back and they tell me that, the domestic was involved and the domestic was involved. Sure. And I get a lot of that, sure. Okay? And I always say to the domestic, you know, first of all, you want everybody to respect you. Mm. And the harder you work at being taking charge, you need to tell your employees, I am in charge of this home when you're not here. Mm. I'm going to make absolutely sure over the Christmas festive season, nobody comes to visit me in this property here. Mm. I will watch out, listen out. I've got the tools to do the job. When I go out in the street, I do not talk about what's going on here. Mm. You see, it's so dangerous because the criminals are very sharp. They have this process. I've just done a lesson on what the criminal had to say. And he said, you know, every criminal has when they work in a team, right? They've each one of them has got a different job to do. They're not all going to do the same thing.
Right.
And so one of the jobs is to become the proposer, right? That's what you see. I even learned the lingo. Huh? Yeah, the proposer. So they will go, le guy, mahani pie, you know? And the next thing.
Brilliant. Yeah. I don't know where that alter ego came from.
And you know, the body language will go, hello, my sweet, you know. And then the next thing, the domestic will be getting gifts. And there'll always be different cars. And that they're getting information. And the next thing, they're sleeping together. And she'll be saying, oh, you know, I'm so fed up with my madam. I'm so glad she's going away. You know, she's pissing me off. You know, my madam, and I love my madam, but she's seriously, it's enough time now. I need to have a break from her. And, of course, that's a red flag. And then he'll say, I'm outside the guy. I'm outside the property. And she'll go and spray the perfume and a bit of deodorant and, you know, get the hair looking gorgeous and put a little bit of lipstiffy on and out she go and just doesn't even look. Just sees the car, presses the open the gate, and of course the team walks in. So it's very, very, it's a very,
and
very.
Do you find oftentimes they're unaware until that point?
It's the people who are not coming to my lessons who don't know any better. And that kills me. That kills me.
What, in your opinion, as somebody with inside information, are the biggest misconceptions about crime in South Africa? What are we missing?
I don't think, you know, it's very unfortunate that there are so many homeowners that don't realize that when they're treating somebody disrespectfully, that this can lead to a crime incident. And that's, to me, a huge worry. I think there are misconceptions regarding we live in a gated community and we're safe. That is absolute B-O-O-L-S-H-E-E-T. Bullshit. I had a Frenchman who gave me a lesson. And he kept saying bullshit. So now we use that one as well. So not just Footsec, we use bull, B-O-O-L. Yeah. So it's a very big concern.
Do you feel like a lot of crime comes out of resentment?
Yes. Without question. You know, it was very sad because, and they were very quick to tell me, hey, this last month, that there was a, in one of the suburbs, I won't mention which one, because it's not appropriate, that a domestic worker murdered her employer.
Oh, my goodness.
And there was a toddler and I think about a four-year-old who were just left with the mother because the employer had gone home to confront the domestic worker. And she was disgruntled, I heard, from them, because trust me, that it all feeds back to me, because she wasn't being paid on time. So she took out a knife and she just repeatedly stabbed this woman, and she's a dead person today.
That by no means justifies the act.
No, it doesn't.
Whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly. When I went with you,
that level of frustration is quite profound.
Trust me, that's serious.
Sure.
You know, when I went through to Laudium, for courtesy of Yusuf Abramji from Crimeline, he invited me. There was a woman there who I understand from her relative who stood up and talked that particular Saturday morning. It was one of those workshops, and she said, My sister treated her, the domestic worker, like her own daughter.
Mm.
Now, that own daughter actually cut the hands off, cut the arms off with the boyfriends and then ran away. Now, what's wrong with this picture here? Something's seriously wrong with this picture, because if we think we're being good to the domestic worker or the gardener or et cetera, but they are now making a choice to harm us so brutally, there's got to be a huge amount of anger because they have been disrespected. And it all boils down to that in Bali, because there's been a level of disrespect or a lack of fulfilling a promise, I assume.
Which, again, by no means justifies that sort of crime.
No, it doesn't.
But it definitely, I think, points to a problem.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. You see, that's what I teach them. I say communication is the universal solvent. You need, and I'm asking you to make it your job. I'm not asking you to make your madam to do you, or your master to make it their job, because I'm not there to talk to them.
Mm.
Your job is to make sure that you've got clear communication, and you don't confront when you're upset or angry. You go there and you sit them down and say, could we have a little chat? Like this lady I was telling you about with that went to the clinic and they did this poly on her.
Mm.
I mean, I spent the entire lesson in Bedford View, and they're saying, you take her to this, and you can take her to this society, and you can, she must, and by the way. I said, guys, she's got a good job. Her daughter's pregnant and a matric. Why would she now go in and bop the madam on the nose, you know, and start going attacking? Because that's not the answer, is it? But sometimes the employers need to catch a wake up. But there's always the right way and there's the wrong way.
Right.
And if you do it the wrong way,
yeah,
and if you do it when you're upset or angry, you're going to do it the wrong way.
Sure,
and that applies to the employee and the employer.
Right.
Both parties.
I think we all need to learn something about tone.
Without question.
I think it's something that we don't pay enough attention to, and I think it goes a long way.
Yeah, and body language.
Body language, tone, all of that is incredibly... It's just effective communication, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have such a difficult task as mediator.
Yeah.
And I see you very much as a champion of the domestic worker, but I know that you also have the employer's best interest at heart.
Yes.
Right? And the work you do benefits both.
Yes.
But it's such a difficult space that you cannot tiptoe around anyone of them and any issue.
No.
Right? You've just got to be 100% direct.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure leads to all kinds of criticism.
No, it doesn't actually.
No,
because so, if they turn to me for advice, I will tell it the way it is.
Okay, so really, have you faced criticism in the work that you do?
Not really. Only this man who decided that he wanted he was paid by the community to look after the suburb. He was He used to write the newsletter for the community in the suburb, and he was also an estate agent, okay? So he wanted my mailing list. Now, I keep very strict records because I must keep records for a number of different reasons. I mean, if there's a crisis situation, I can get hold of them. I can get hold of their employers. I've had situations when the one is phoning me from the East Rand and I can hear her screaming in the background with a boyfriend who's threatening to kill her. And I can then get hold of the employer and say to them, do you know where she lives? Do you know where she is? And that's, you know, all these things. Mm. But this man wanted my mailing list. And I said, I can't give you my mailing list. It's confidential information. No, we want the info. And he wrote in the newsletter that I add no value to the police, to the security industry, or to the homeowners.
And you know, a blatant lie.
And of course, it actually closed me down. I landed up going back in the January and I had five people attend from 60, 70.
What do you feel you've learned about South Africans through this process?
I think I'd like to say, first of all, that I'm extremely blessed in the work that I do. Yes, it is hard to be on the receiving end of bad news, and it's a taxing job from the point of view that you've got to use a lot of energy. Mm. And I literally, you know, 10-12-2, running from one desk to another when you're running 26 of them. But there should be more of it. I just think that it, you know, if
should be more of you, more pennies.
If I could set up a school and empower other people, I would really like to do that. Mm. I just feel that more people can do it. They don't have to be mad like me. Mm. They don't. Honestly, they don't.
Sure.
I've had people who've run these lessons and I've given them the material and they've done, they fall in love with a speaker.
Right.
They develop that rapport because you can't have a person that's not kind.
Mm.
So I am surrounded by exceptionally wonderful people. I mix with the Residents Association. These are people who get involved in the community. I mix with the – I was on the executive committee of the Parkview Police Station, which was an absolute mind blast of experience, wonderful experience, absolutely fantastic. Mm. And these are all very good people. It's almost like I feel like I'm a magnet for good people.
Okay.
So that's really the upside of it.
Right.
I do think there's a lot of apathetic people out there.
Uh-huh.
Or it can't happen to me syndrome. Or I mean, I went to one. I was invited by one of the security companies to be a guest speaker, and when I got there, it was one of these very snobby, you know, very. We pee eau de cologne bunches and, you know, the very, very snotty bunch. Anyway, so now I get there and the man says to me, so what do you do? So I said, well, I teach the domestics. Oh, my Lord, really? You know, my domestic has been with me for 100 years. I thought you were such an arsehole. Sorry. You know, of course she needs. I mean, everybody needs motivation. Everybody needs recognition. I love South Africa. I love the domestics and gardeners. And that's what I feel about South Africa.
Okay.
We are so lucky to have them.
And tell me what is most, I don't know what you expected going into it, what you expected to get out of this work, but what has most surprised you?
What has surprised me? Not a lot. I think the good news stories have surprised me.
What have been some of your moments where you're like, no. That cannot be.
Are you meaning from a positive point of view or from
a negative? Either.
I'm amazed by how many brave people there are.
Mm.
How many good, brave, exceptional people. There is a perception that the criminals are attacking white people only in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg, for example. Mm. That's the part that has amazed me. On the downside, because I have discussed this with them and I've asked them for their stories to stand up and tell me if you have been personally attacked in any way whatsoever, and you'd be surprised at how much crime there is in the Sowetos, in their hometowns, what amazed me was how the criminals will share information amongst themselves because they go to conferences to learn how to do these things. And if they haven't been in jail, no, they do. They do, I promise you. Oh, trust me. I've interviewed these oaks.
Have you really?
Yeah, oh, no, yeah.
That
absolutely.
Is
fully,
fascinating.
Fully, yeah. So,
there are conventions.
Oh, I went to jail to interview one of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Could you tell
us
about that? Gosh.
Well, I was approached by one of the counselors, and she said to me, they've got a group here in this jail here. What's it called? Up the road here on the way to Kailami. Anyway, so I said, count me in, boy. Anyway, there were five of them, five inmates, and we had the head of the prison, and he welcomed us, and there was a little tea party syndrome, etc. And these five guys had put together bull terriers against crime, and they were moved quite regularly. I was actually reading back on some of my notes on it recently. And
so these are rehabilitated criminals?
No,
no,
they are criminals who are in jail who've made a choice to teach other inmates not to go back to crime when they come out of jail.
Sure.
And he has bashed on my door ever since because he's a very good speaker.
Mm.
He recently let me down, which was a big disappointment because I'd lost my voice and I was hoping that he would. But he's got a job, and I understand that he couldn't do. But the insight into the techniques of the criminals.
What kinds of things?
Well, for example, he told me about the proposing.
Yeah.
He told me that he wanted to be the striker. You know,
what does the striker do?
Well, he's the first guy, and he didn't want to be a team player. He was the head Mkulubos, you know.
Okay.
And he's going to charge in there, and he's going to grab that diamond ring and put it in his onderbroek, and then share the rest of the stuff that they steal with his team, you know. And he had five people in his team. He told me that they could park three blocks away and watch people with their key. You know, when they see the body language, they're coming back because they study their cases. You know, the criminals don't just stick in their thumb and pull out a plum. They say, that's the house and we know why we're going there. We know what they've got. We know how many they've got. We know what we're going for. So, you know, we tend to think that the crime of opportunity is, I don't think, as bad as the those who've made a choice to do crime.
Yeah.
And they can literally be on top of that domestic worker or gardener within less than 30 seconds. And that gate only has to be open this much. And they'll be in there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Highly sophisticated stuff.
Yeah, very.
You know, I really do wish more inmates. I'm sure prisons run a lot of programs.
Yeah.
Like
I did think about working with them.
Information,
yeah.
And actually would add such a powerful element to your program as well.
Without question.
That's fantastic suspense.
Yeah. I think one of the most important things, Mbali, is the information that can come out. I would particularly like to see some of my people being trained to become victim supporters of their own kind.
Mm.
They don't want a fancy white person to come and do victim support with them. They should be getting victim support counseling because when you're a victim, the ramifications and the illnesses that can ensue are enormous. But in particular, I would like them to be able to give counseling and to empower them. I want to build these people up. I want to make them as powerful as they are capable of being, and they are being underestimated. So if they are managed properly and they become a victim supporter of their own people, can you imagine how much information is going to trickle in?
Sure.
If it's managed properly, because you obviously can't divulge that to anybody else, but you can at least advise the person that you're counseling how they could go about the 32211 passing on information because it's anonymous, you know. So there's a whole bunch of things that we can achieve. There's so much more that we can achieve with the right infrastructure.
What do you need? If you had to
sponsors, my sponsor unfortunately was a big company, and they are leaving the country. So they are. I had them for about 7-8 years, and they helped me enormously. They sent out SMSs to their client base. They sent out. They did my printing for me. They helped me with banners for the year-end party. It's those kind of things. I'm not necessarily asking for lots of money, but obviously I'm always looking for specialist speakers to come in because I can't talk about satanic crime. There's certain things I can't do.
So that's what I'd like to know is, you know, not everyone may not be able to give money.
No, they don't have to.
What sorts of things could people contribute that are non-monetary that will go a long way?
From an administration point of view, there's that side. There's the printing, if they've got a printing facility internally, marketing and saying that they are proud to be a part of fighting crime. I got involved with SMAC at one stage, which was Sport Mobilization Against Crime. Wouldn't that be fantastic if we could get all the sportsmen involved? I mean, there's money there, and we could all get involved in. There's so much more that we can all do if we all making an effort, and it doesn't have to be a big effort. It doesn't have to have a big shoe. It can have a little toe in the water, and every little toe becomes a big footprint.
And in terms of your legacy before your time with Domestic Watch is up, do you have anything you're hoping to achieve?
Oh, gosh, yes, absolutely. You know, the point is that I can't die with all this information. I absolutely have to make sure that I can pass this on to good people. And I'm talking about people who are there need to be a screening process. And I think the ideal situation would be to have a CPF member who is allocated the job of screening the people who would like to do this job, because you can't have criminals taking on my material, and there's no shortage of material. And I'd like to make more DVDs. I mean, wouldn't that be fantastic? And my DVD creators, I've got two of them. They're fantastic.
You've got to go online. We've got to create a YouTube channel. Yeah. We've got to go digital. We've got to figure something out. Your material is remarkable. You've got archives of such valuable information that I think just needs to go digital. We certainly need to do a push for
that. I have to pass on the recipe, and I can do that. I'm really good at train the trainer stuff, and it doesn't matter as long as somebody else is helping me to make it work. You know, it could be just their facilities. You know, up the road could be they've got an auditorium or they've got a training room that I could use. There's so much stuff that we could do as together. And if people just open their doors and say, or even if they just say, well, once a month, we've got 500 people in our building, I'll Penny come in here and come and give them an hour's training every once a month. There's just, it's endless.
I'm already having thoughts in terms of what we can do.
Thanks, Mbali.
Especially in terms of our show.
Yeah.
Because we do have quite a significant audience here at Cliff Central, and it's constantly growing.
Well, that's awesome.
So there's definitely ways we can funnel some of what you do into what we do.
Yeah.
Penny, just lastly, what principle or belief keeps you going in spite of strained and limited resources, in spite of being discouraged sometimes by people who are apathetic or scathing in any way?
I don't dwell on that.
What is the driving force? What is it in you?
I think the feedback I get. I think when I have so many people writing to me or verbally telling me that I have made an incredible impact and that their domestic is never going to be the same, that they have got a new form of confidence, that they are really strong in what they're doing, that they are passionate about going to the lessons and learning more. When the domestics themselves come and tell me how much they love coming to the lessons. You know, there's just, I cannot look at the negative side of things. I don't do negative.
That's just clearly not in your nature.
No. I was told this morning that you are such a positive person, Penny. You should have died this year, but you didn't. I said, no, I didn't die, and I'm not going to die because I've still got work to do.
How old are you, by the way?
I'm 69.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah.
You feel like a spring chicken.
Yes, I do. I do.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's a pity they operated and buggered up my voice. But anyway, you know what? We were still working on it. Yeah.
And do you have a message for South Africans?
I think we have to have greater respect for the police. I think we've got to start working with the police. You know, my work is so multifaceted. Yes, I am there. My key people are my domestics and gardeners, but then so are the employers. Mm. But then so are the neighbours. But then so is the community. But so is South Africa. Mm. But then so is the police. And everything started because I was training the police, and the police are so desperate to get the community to make a choice to work with them, which is why I love training them. Mm. I teach them customer service, and I want the community to love the police and make a choice to start passing on information, reporting information, getting involved. And there are so many, there is a multitude. Having worked as a CPF member, there's a multitude of things that we can do together. I mean, the domestics and gardeners can become street captains, for goodness sake. In Lynbro Park, I had people on bicycles. Lynbro bought bicycles for them to do patrolling. I mean, hello. And they loved it. Mm. They drove around in bicycles. I mean, can you imagine my domestics and gardeners driving around on bicycles? Mm. I mean, it's just one. The message that I want to give out is, let's motivate each other to do something. Let's pass on and let's report crime. Let's not say, oh, well, you know, there's nothing in it for me and I wasn't there. Nobody was hurt, so we won't bother. That's called B-O-O-L. S-H-E-E-T.
I absolutely love it. Yeah. And what a note to end on. Thank you so much for coming. Guys, I feel like we've only scratched the surface, but I hope we can actually start to have you on more regularly, or at least, you know, include some of your remarkable content. Certainly, like I said in the beginning, in this context, you're a bit of a godfather for us. You've done a lot of the groundwork. And I think this could be an incredibly powerful collaboration. And it's been such a pleasure to meet you.
Well, quite frankly, I am so honored to be here. I'm so privileged to be here. I feel really humbled. Thank you. You know, I'm no good on my own. And when I have a medium like this to be able to get a message out to our beautiful South Africa, you know, I'm honestly deeply touched and extremely blessed.
And you know what's great is that we're evolving every day, and we're finding our purpose as we go. And by no means will that ever be static, but it's lovely when we get moments like these where kind of, you know, we meet people like you and everything we can do falls into place. And I think, like I said, it's going to be a great fusion of strengths and of motivation between us and you. So thank you. And how can people get hold of you, Pins?
My email address is madpenny, of course, at apsamail.co.za. Or I can hand out my cell phone number. It's 082-461-6968.
Okay, great. So that's Penny's details at Domestic Watch. Ours are, okay, so Tuliza usually does this part of the show. I hope I don't screw it up. You can follow us on Twitter at Made Project. That's M-A-I-D-E Project. And on Facebook at The Made Sessions. That's M-A-I-D-E Sessions. Thanks, as always, for joining us on this amazing show. She has no voice, but she's here. I can see she's gushing. I must have done good. Please join us next week, Thursday, as always, 6 o'clock sharp. We'll see you then. Have a good evening.
Cliff Central. The revolution. I've got something important to tell you. CliffCentral.com.